We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And we're joined now by Connor Orr from Sports Illustrated, Monday Morning Quarterback. Connor, welcome in. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Well, there's a lot going on in football, even though they aren't in camp and playing games and doing the workouts and all of that. And I'm just wondering if everything going on now gives an advantage to the more technologically advanced teams, or are they all kind of on the same level in terms of using the technology for, you know, what would normally be their spring workouts and such?
I think the big advantage right now is on the shoulders of coaches who know how to teach. You know, there are kind of teaching coaches, and there are coaches that just kind of lock themselves in a room with their quarterback, and then the rest of the team doesn't see them until Sunday. But the coaches who, you know, study educational theory, that understand that there are a million different ways to get things across to your players, I think that's going to be the real advantage there. And certainly Belichick has been known for that for years. But we saw Joe Judge in New York basically get the job because he sold himself as that, a technician, a teacher, someone who can make people better. And so it'll be really interesting to see who comes out these first few weeks of the regular season in a better place than other teams.
And, you know, I've thought for a while now that since they've taken the preseason and the starting guys don't play, and, you know, everybody kind of takes it easy during the preseason as opposed to the way they used to do it, that the quality of play in the beginning is not as good. You know, that you see more bad penalties, you see more sloppy plays, drops, et cetera, et cetera. Do you expect, because of what's been going on, that we're going to have a lesser quality of football if, in fact, the season even is able to start on time?
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if it does. But, you know, if by some miracle the NFL season is allowed to start on time, I think that that's certainly going to be a narrative early on, that we're going to see more drop passes, we're going to see more busted plays. I think it'll certainly favor the defense, just because I think a lot of these teams aren't going to be able to get everything together in a timely fashion. So, yeah, I mean, I would expect that. We saw that after the lockout, too, the same kind of level of difficulty. But this is even more extreme where, you know, I think a lot of these guys aren't even feeling comfortable enough to stage workouts. Now, Tom Brady and some of those guys have done it, Ben Roethlisberger, but it's not everybody. So it'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Well, and as you alluded to before, it's going to be interesting with the self-motivated players who work hard on their own and they don't need the coach to egg them on to perform, you know, the competitive guys versus the guys that need a little kick in the butt every once in a while. They may, you know, not being supervised, not perform up to what they would if they had a coach riding them constantly.
And that is especially true, I think, for rookies, right? I mean, you know, you've heard stories going back years where, you know, a kid was basically pushed through college by a strength coach or a position coach or some sort of a grad assistant. And, you know, it's funny, when you get to the NFL, despite all the resources you have, I mean, you could sit there in your apartment all day and nobody's going to call you and tell you to work out or do anything else. And so I would be, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how that works out, because, you know, coaches really like to get their hands on these guys early and make sure that they're in their heads, and they just can't do that as much now.
Yeah, and that's why the draft sometimes is such a crapshoot, because they have techniques, but it's really hard to differentiate those guys with a big motor. You know, the guys that'll do it on their own versus the guys that I'm in the NFL now. It's got to come to me versus the guys who the next step is greatness in the NFL.
Yeah, and that goes back to just having that psychological wherewithal, and so there are some scouts who are just better at it than other people, and you can see that historically going back to teams that just tend to draft a little bit better than other teams. It's because there are people who in the allotted 45 minutes or hour or in the research that they're able to do, they can find that out about somebody. And it'll be really interesting to see. We saw a lot fewer teams take chances on guys in the draft first off, and so I think it's almost like they're anticipating a little bit of this too.
In this off season, it's obviously very, very different. It seems to me that players are getting into trouble more with the law and various other things. Do you see it that way, or do you see it just as a typical off season where guys are going to do what they're going to do?
Yeah, I don't know if that has to do with anything in particular. Certainly there's been some high-profile cases around here in New York and New Jersey specifically, but, I think that could be indicative of just the person. Certainly everybody's cooped up. Everybody, is frustrated. So I don't know. I think it would be hard to pin that on one thing in particular, but coaches hold their breath every offseason, and you never want any of your guys to be doing something they're not supposed to.
I'm going to throw something at you. Tell me what you think. I have a recent friend who was in law enforcement in the Florida area, and he was telling me that a lot of the players are in gangs, and a lot of the players, started in gangs and continue their affiliations, even though they're highly paid professional football players, and that they associate with gang members during the season. And the NFL kind of knows this and turns a blind eye toward it. What's your reaction to that?
That's never something that's kind of come across my desk in terms of anything that I've reported on. I will say that, I think that there's a reason that teams put so much effort into the scouting process. We've heard of scouts who dress in disguise and, follow these guys around and, trail them to different places. And so I think that there's, certainly a reason that they do that. That's interesting. That's not something that's ever come across my desk in terms of any of the reporting that I've done.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised in this whole DeAndre Baker thing that came down. And I'm following it in the media from a distance, and you're seeing, his lawyer say, well, there's more to it than you think, and this isn't going to be prosecutable or anything like that. It's going to go away. And then you hear the other side of it that, well, he was brandishing a gun. What are you hearing about that, and what do you think the NFL is going to do?
Well, it's interesting. The NFL is kind of so backlogged right now with everything. And, how are they going to handle any of these disciplinary cases? You can go back to the Patriots and the sideline fiasco when they were taping the Bengals sideline. And that issue still has not been resolved. And, it's apples to oranges here. But all this stuff goes to the top of the league. And, when you're dealing with a chaotic start to the season, if you don't know exactly when anything's going to happen, it's hard to get everybody on the same page and to come down and address all these issues. And, typically the league will wait for these quiet summer Fridays, Saturdays to release some of this information. And we haven't heard anything about a lot of this stuff. And so it's interesting to see how they're going to deal with the backlog of disciplinary cases, ranging from very serious to, kind of the minutia at the bottom of the barrel.
Sure. And one of those items I brought up at the top of the show, and I was going to talk to you about it, was the modifications that they were talking about to the Rooney Rule. And according to reports, they have tabled that for the moment. And Herm Edwards has come out and said, yeah, I'm glad they're not going to do that, because he doesn't feel that teams should be incentivized for hiring minorities. Where do you think that's going to stand at this point? Is that something that they're really going to dive deeply into, or do you think that that's something they're thinking better of, or where do you think it stands?
Well, I think that the plan that, I think is being hammered out at the moment is the right thing to do, right? I mean, and that is diversity education for owners to sort of coach them up a little bit on maybe why they've made the decisions that they've made over the years and to educate people. I mean, you know, the thing that I keep hearing around the league is, how many Mike Tomlins did we miss out on? And Mike Tomlin was famously the reason that the Rooney Rule was put in place. I mean, Art Rooney wasn't considering him, but decided to bring him in anyway and was blown away by the interview, decided to make that hire and, won his franchise another Super Bowl. So I think that once you control the narrative there and you're able to explain to owners that, you know, you've been making decisions based on your comfort level for so long, but here's what you're missing out on, and here's what you need to smarten up on. I think that that's a big first step. And, you know, obviously some of the fellowships, the diversity fellowships, minority fellowships, I think are going to be a big piece of this puzzle just to get these guys in the building, especially on the offensive side of the ball, working with quarterbacks where the pipeline is established. Because the pipeline is broken right now, and the league needs something to reinvigorate the coaching cycle. It seems like every year we're hearing about the same 5 or 10 people who have, a mediocre level of success and just kind of keep, chugging along and getting these jobs every year.
Yeah, and the minority representation is down. And you just wonder why, and you alluded to it. It's a comfort level thing. I don't know that there are that many owners. I'm sure there are a few who are bigots, but I think what we're talking about are people that just, you hang with certain people and this is outside your realm. But you wonder if you're an owner of a football team and football is 75-80% minority that, shouldn't you kind of get a little bit more familiar with it? Or is it just that I'm the owner, I'm detached from the players? I mean, how does that work?
Well, I think that, there's a, an institutional issue with ownership in general. I mean, so many of these people, once we got away from, the Mara family and the Rooney family and sort of those relationships that owners had with teams, I think that's when the NFL kind of took a nosedive in terms of quality, because most of these owners are spending, the bare minimum amount of time in their offices actually caring about any of this stuff. And they show up right before they're supposed to make a decision. They take a crash course lesson from a consulting firm that they've hired to do all the work for them. And then they make the decision that is going to embarrass them least when they're hanging out with all their other billionaire friends. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. None of these people want to go out on a limb and do anything interesting and make a difficult decision. And none of them want to spend that time and actually kind of dig in and learn the business. And so, that is, that's been going back for 10, 15, 20 years since a lot of these guys have been plucking these teams out with a couple billion spare dollars that they have. So I think hopefully with some of the planning that the league is doing, that they can kind of get in front of them and say that they're making a huge mistake and that they're costing themselves money at the end of the day.
Well, it's interesting because I'm seeing a guy like Tepper in Charlotte who really seems to, hiring Matt Rhule and giving him that kind of money for that period of time is really, to me, very outside of the box. Now you're seeing Snyder saying that, Ron Rivera is going to have complete control over this. I'll believe it when I see it. But you're starting to see owners just, do things different organizationally. And I'm wondering if that's a success, if that's going to be a trend in the sport.
You hope so. I mean, because I think that there's more information out there and, there are better ways of doing things. And, certainly what David Tepper is doing, you follow that 49ers model of aligning the GM and the coach together, putting them on similar length contracts, giving them an above length contract that's typical for first-time head coaches to, let them build the thing the right way and to prevent them from making any rash decisions that are going to hurt the roster long-term. It's common sense stuff, but until a team has success with those models, A lot of these owners will just sit around and they'll do things the way that they have always done it. But I think that, you know, it's interesting. There's a couple of good ones out there. You know, certainly the people in Baltimore have been doing a great job, San Francisco. And so people study that. And I think the smart ones take their lessons and they apply them to what's going on.
Yeah, and that the patience factor, you know, obviously Rhule is not going to be successful right away with Carolina. You look at the roster and it doesn't seem to be all that great, but you're building something and it will take a while to do that. The fans are notoriously impatient, as we all are, but I wonder if now owners, general managers are going to be a little bit more patient and say, all right, you know, you're instituting a program, maybe it's a player, it's not going to happen overnight. Or do you think that pressure from fans and media and all of that are just going to go back to the way things were? Like, okay, you didn't win your first 2 years. Let's bring somebody else in.
I think the model truly is you know, Jeffrey Lurie in Philadelphia, where, you know, he threw all of his support behind Chip Kelly, made a lot of difficult decisions, but maintained a close enough proximity to the business to understand when it was time to pull the plug and maintained relationships with enough of his players to understand when it was time to pull the plug and then entrusted the power with the right people. And, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to is, you know, patience is key, but it's also, you know, strategic patience. It's, you know, not getting the wool pull over your eyes, maybe like Jerry Jones did for the last 8 years or some of these other guys where, you know, coaches can talk themselves into anything, staying in places that they don't deserve to be for 8, 9, 10 years. But, you know, I think that there are smart people out there and, you know, hopefully they get to, get a bigger piece of the decision-making pie because, you know, I do think that the franchises that take their time and they build things the right way, you know, it's better for the league and more good teams is good for everybody.
Okay. Couple of specifics before we let you go. The consensus opinion is, this is a rebuilding year in New England. Belichick has stripped things down. Tom Brady's no longer there. Gronk is no longer there. Of course, he wasn't there last year either, but a lot of players have defected that he's going to have to start from the ground up and that this might be a 6 or 7 win team. How do you feel about that? Or is this guy just such a great coach and molder of men that they'll have success despite what seems to be a bit of a lack of talent on the roster?
I have a hard time betting against Bill Belichick, and I'm not a gambling person, especially in these times, but I saw the Patriots at 30-1 at Caesars to win the Super Bowl, and I thought about moving a large sum of money over because I think that I think he's the greatest coach of our generation, you know, certainly and potentially all time. And, you know, Jarrett Stidham, if you talk to some of the scouts who have seen him go through the Senior Bowl process, you know, and his final year in college are very high on him. I thought that he might have been a first-round pick had he come out in a year like this year. So who knows, you know, but I have a really, really difficult time betting against them. I'll still pick them to win the division, and we'll see. I mean, remember, they were 11-6, I think, or 11-5 with Matt Castle, and look what Matt Castle was able to do for the rest of his career outside of New England.
What exactly?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Other thing is the Jets signing a backup quarterback in Joe Flacco. And when I heard this, I go, what the heck are they doing? Then I see that $1.5 million, which is not a huge commitment. And, you know, we did see Darnold miss 3 games with mono last year. And, you know, you can get hurt and twist an ankle, a knee. I think it's a very inexpensive insurance policy if Flacco's neck is okay and he's able to play. What do you think?
I think it's a super smart move. That offensive line, I think, is still not where it needs to be to support a young quarterback like Sam Darnold, who's still developing, and the chances of him getting another injury, you know, while you would never wish that on somebody, are certainly, you know, good. I mean, you know, NFL's 100% injury rate. And Joe Flacco, I think this is a good situation for him. You know, he's definitely a family guy, gets to be closer to home than he's been really since in a couple of years since he's been in Baltimore. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good situation all around. And, you know, veterans seem to tend to work a little bit better with Adam Gase, especially quarterbacks. So, yeah, I think a couple of smart signings by Joe Douglas here over the last couple of months.
Yeah, not splashy signings. You know, he's kind of done things quietly, blue collar wise, but seems to be putting something good together. So Jet fans may have some hope for the future. We've heard that before, though, haven't we?
Yeah, cautious hope.
Okay. Well, Connor, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.